It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
It has begun. And I don't remember what I was going to talk about.
That's a shame.
This week's color, also from Zoya, is called Tao, T-A-O, which makes no sense until you realize Zoya frequently names their colors not based on the actual shades, but on the names of women, in which case it then also doesn't make sense in a completely different way. But it's basically gray, a little silvery, for those of you who aren't watching on YouTube. So there we go. Good show. I thought I had something interesting to talk about. I can't remember what it was then. It's probably really good.
I don't know.
Well, hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that probably won't be able to blame it on the internet connection this time. For those of you listening and not watching, there's not an internet lag. There's just awkward silences. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 527, I think.
All right, I take it back. There may be major internet issues. We'll have to see.
Are you getting some William Anakin going on?
Yes. They're at the point where it feels like it's half dramatic pacing on your part and half internet connection, but it's hard to tell. For those of you...
I'm not doing anything dramatic as far as I know.
Oh, you're always dramatic. William the Drama Queen is what they call him. For those of you just joining us, we should explain how the show is. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like yourselves write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, topics, questions, comments, things like that. The hat magically on its own transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. It's people's draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is almost all of it. It feels like it's been longer than a week just because last week we had a real weird stuff, but I don't remember all the crap that I would have talked about last week had we had a full length episode. So that doesn't help. How's your week been?
No. It's been busy. I mean, mostly writing. I'm kind of under a crunch to finished a writing project I'm working on that you've been helping me with.
I have, and I can tell everybody it's a disaster, and I don't think it's possibly going to finish. No, it's actually very cool, but it is also intimidating. It's a very ambitious project.
Yes, it is intimidating. That's a good word for it.
Editing your work made me scared about my future as a writer. I was like, shit, I'm going to run into this kind of stuff too, and I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's tricky. It's, you know, you'd think I'd be better at picking subject matter or projects or whatever. I mean, because I don't have to write about the things I write about, but I like.
No, it's a very cool idea, though. I like it a lot. It's just ambitious.
Yeah, I like it too. I maybe it's beyond me. I don't know. But I mean, it's fun to work on. Actually, it's pretty fun to work on. It's just frustrating because, you know, it's you when you're writing something, and I'm sure all writers probably experience something similar. You can't help but judge your progress by, like, you know, your words, right? And sometimes that's not what progress looks like. Sometimes progress is the same 50 pages that you've got, you spent, you know, several hours just making better or whatever. And that's just how it is.
Sometimes it's the words you don't say.
but the frustration there is that you don't know. I mean, until it's done, for all, you know, that work you did on those 50 pages before you're finished could be all undone. Although still, that work you did was probably necessary to do. So it's like, it's not work like other work, you know? It's not like mowing the lawn where you can look at the lawn and it's like, oh, the lawn is mowed. The grass looks shorter and the whole thing looks nicer. There's just, it's not work like that. I mean, even when you finished it, even, you know, like I finished novels before and you're like, there's nothing I can do to make this better. So this is going out now, just the way it is. You're like, you know, there's not this great satisfying moment of it's done. You know, this is exactly what I envisioned, because it's never exactly what you envisioned. Hopefully it's a little better than you envisioned, or hopefully it's at least, you know, something that you can go, yeah, that I like, you know, this is good. I can put this out there and not be totally ashamed of it. But it's not it's not like restoring a car or doing a load of dishes, you know, it's not that kind of job. It's just, it's hard to know what progress looks like sometimes.
And sometimes when you're sitting on it for years, basically finished, but it hasn't gone anywhere yet, you keep thinking of plot holes that you need to fix in it. And then you go back and write more stuff when you thought it was done, and it sucks. But also, I think it was a terrible metaphor, because that is exactly how I handle lawn mowing. I'm never finished with it. I usually go over it once, roughly, and then I workshop it with some friends who are willing to say what needs to happen. And it's never really finished, because the grass is always growing. And so how I envision
the lawn,
never quite how I imagined the lawn would be. And I frequently give up for a while. It's, yeah. Lawn mowing is tough.
It seems like this kind of work for a person who does it for a living is a kind of madness in a way. It's like, this isn't how normal people are supposed to live their lives.
I'm coming down to, it's very interesting to find the patches of people who still haven't really got the idea that Trish and I can afford to live off of her income, and that's what we plan to do for the foreseeable future, because that's what we both like the best. I'm not right. looking for a job. I'm not unable to get a job, things like that. Like, this is what we're pleased with. And so someone the other day who is not super technical savvy was like, why don't you do something on YouTube? people seem to be making money lots on there. And I was like, yeah. I said, the problem is that's a lot of work. And she's like, it is? And I said, yeah, this is what people don't get with a lot of these sort of alt professions. Acting, writing, singing, and you know, online influencer or whatever is like, they're a lot of work. They're just different work. And people don't see it because they see, like, when it comes to acting. Yeah, you see the people in the big movies making millions of dollars per movie. There are tons of actors who have been doing it for decades and hustle their butt to just earn a living. There are plenty of authors that make it by, but that's because they are pumping out stuff and not making a ton of money on it. For every single successful YouTuber you see who's earning a living out there, there are thousands that are trying and don't do it. And I've known people who actually earn their living online like that. And it's frequently more work than a 9-to-5 job because there's so much producing content constantly, 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 handling your own sort of marketing and image all the time. And yeah, it's crazy. I would never want to do it. It sounds awful.
Well, and also it's not a matter of talent either. I mean, some of the most talented actors aren't on the big screen.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Doing what you're talking about, hustling and doing stuff on stage. Singers too. I mean, some of the most talented people in the world are people nobody knows except a handful of people. It's just,
yeah,
you know, it's not about talent. It's not about
efforts.
There's luck involved. There's also persistence, and there's also like, yeah. And there's also, like you're saying, some people are really good at the marketing aspect of it, right? Like they're actually only marginally talented, but they're so good at finding. I mean, when you're an artist and you, first of all, every artist needs an audience, full stop. I mean, that's, of course, I mean, they go together. If you're an artist without an audience, you're not even really an artist. You're just a person that's doing, I don't know what you're doing. But when you're an artist, you have to have an audience. And when you're looking for that audience, it's kind of like prospecting, right? You're like looking for the mother lode of finding those people who are going to appreciate your thing. And it doesn't matter if you could be the best artist in the world, prospecting for those people is the same for you as it is for everybody else, for people who are half as talented, same thing. And if that person who's half as talented as you is better at prospecting for those fans, if they're better at that than you are, then they're going to do better than you do.
Or has the connections and or capital to hire someone else to find the audience for them, which there are people who do that professionally.
Exactly. So,
but it's almost always a fair bit of work is involved. Like that's the,
thing. No question.
If there really was an easy way that pretty much anybody could get independently wealthy, a lot of people would do it. Although I hear medical record transcriptions, you can earn up to $2,000 a month, working from home, setting your own hours, being your own boss. I see signs around that. I think it's awesome. I should do that. This, I should have talked about this up front. The magical, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to lag. We get this right after we're done recording. It's weird to be getting it in the middle. Let's give you the perspective on how the lag is. Okay, as soon as I tell you this, William, you answer as soon as you hear it. What is 2 + 2?
4.
Oh, that is not good. That is really not good. Yeah, no. But the length of time between when I asked that, you'll hear when you listen again, the gap between when I said it and when you answered was significant. Wow. All right. I'm going to ask you a question.
Well, it's because it looks like I'm in Coralville, but I'm not. I'm in Ukraine. That's what's going on.
I thought that looked like a Ukrainian bookshelf. Okay. Assuming you laughed at my joke, I think the lag's a little better now.
I did
laugh. All right, good. We're making progress. Now, we, the magical talking hat at gmail.com got an email from somebody who wants to help us become an influencer. We've made it. I was reading this.
It's because you were doing your nails.
You were
doing your nails while we were.
It's a cosmetic tutorial now. That's a thing. Next week, contouring.
Yep.
we're gonna start, and then we need to start a beef with another YouTuber. I don't know who yet, but we're gonna be really mad at someone. But I'm reading this thing being like, okay, this is surely a scam, and I'm trying to figure it out. And then I paused and I'm like, it doesn't really matter, because either it's a scam or it's someone who cast a very wide net. And when they find out how many actual views and listens we get, they're going to be like, never mind. This was a terrible idea. So I didn't respond, but I did save the email because that's proof that we've hit big time. Did I talk about finishing the Irregulars?
No.
We finished the Irregulars. It was odd. The last couple episodes are really sort of all connected. It's very like, you know, cliffhanger and this, that, which nowadays we do that. We don't ever watch the second to last episode in a season unless we have time to watch both of the last episodes, because so many shows like to do that. And in those last couple of episodes leading up to the climax, I was annoyed as all get out. It was so full of people acting really dumb or really out of character or stupid huge coincidences and all this crap just to get all the pieces together. Annoyed the hell out of me. That being said, I liked the resolution, and I specifically liked, I mean, they definitely can easily do another season if that happens, but if it doesn't, it resolved. Like, we don't have like three or four cliffhangers introduced in the last 10 minutes as these kind of shows often want to do. Like, I feel closure if it never happens again. That being said, I probably would watch a second season. But yeah, they wrapped stuff up and I was pleased about that. What else would be? I think I talked last week. We watched the Tina Turner documentary. Did I talk about this? Maybe we did it this weekend, so maybe nope. I didn't. Tina Turner documentary.
No, you didn't.
On HBO Max. Highly, highly recommend to everyone. It's very good and enlightening. Like, I felt like I knew who Tina Turner was, like, because I grew up as she was a pop star. And I know about her Ike days and she was abused and all of that jazz. So I'm like, yeah, I got it. No, it's very interesting. Like, her life is crazy. It also gives me hope. She was older than I am now when she released her first solo single, which was What's Love Got to Do with It. She was freaking 45. And it's not her song. It's technically a cover of Lost to the Wind band called Bucks Fizz in the UK that did a really terrifying version of it. So yeah, her whole history is fascinating, and her husband and everything like that. It's a very cool documentary, and I highly recommend it. So that was neat.
Okay,
we finished Kim's Convenience, at least so far. There's a fifth season that's out like now, but it hasn't made it to Netflix. And I still have been recommending that to everyone. It's a great show. Then the trailer for the next MCU movie, Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings, or The Legend of the Ten Rings, came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yep.
played by Simu Liu, also known as Jung Kim from Kim's Convenience. He's like the brother on Kim's Convenience. He's the son in the central family of the show. This absolutely blew our minds. We're watching.
Okay.
And it's starting, I'm like, is that Jung? She's like, I think so. And I was like, Jung can't be a superhero. He's too stupid. And then Trish was like, yeah, but he sure as hell is built like one, which is true. Jung's fucking gorgeous. But it was just so weird. I'm so happy for it. But, and somebody already put a meme together that was, that's basically the Shang-Chi poster, but in the Ten Ring spots are the various other characters from Kim's Convenience. And it's pretty fun. But yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that now. Tomorrow on HBO Max is the new Mortal Kombat. I'm excited for that. Again, not going to be good, but I am excited to watch it. Looks like it could be pretty fucking awesome. We haven't been watching a lot. I've been playing a ton of Genshin Impact. I really like that game a lot. And apparently I have tapped into the zeitgeist, because apparently everybody loves it. It's very popular. That's what the kids are into these days. But it's a good game. I would recommend it to most people. It's very sort of anime vibe-y. Yeah, I like it. It's very cute. It's much more calming than the other. And it's got plenty of stuff to do, because it's totally an MMO just without the other people around. I keep walking around town expecting to see people like jumping up and down and crap, like they do in MMOs, but no, it's just me and all the NPCs. So that's been fun. I finished the book I was reading, the Discworld book Pyramids, which was a hard slog. The first two Discworld books are not very good. I still recommend them over this one. This one was such a hard slog for me. I don't know what it was, but now I got other stuff. So I have, I'm not even going to say a friend, an acquaintance, a friend of a friend, that I know. Some of my gaming group are good friends with this person. And so at cons and other times I have gamed with this person and we know each other. I also knew her beforehand because she's a journalist that used to work at AV Club and has worked at the Dissolve and some other places. And so I knew her work before I met her. And then I met her. And so we sort of know each other. We get along or whatever. Anyway, follow her on Twitter. And she follows me on Twitter. And the other day, it shows me a tweet from someone that she was replying to. And I don't even remember what the tweet was about. But I suddenly look. And it's my ex-girlfriend. Specifically, the first girlfriend I had in college. And consequently, my first a lot of things in college. And so I'm looking her up and it has her listed as an author, which I'm like, great, because she always was wanting to do that, whatever. Nebula, a winning author. And so I look it up and she's like a successful author. She's done a bunch of stuff.
Wow.
And has won a Nebula Award. So I was like very impressed, and also feeling less adequate myself, but very impressed with her. And so I was telling my friends from the gaming group about this. They're like, oh yeah, we met her at WizCon, she's cool. We met her and her husband and blah blah, blah. This happens a lot these days, just like weird small world. I think I've talked before about the guy I went to high school with, who it turns out knows a guy I went to college with, even though we're talking Oregon and Iowa, and in fact he still lives in Oregon and this guy lives in Kansas. And it's through the writing world. I apparently know a lot of writers. Again, not awkward, not lag for those of you listening on audio, just awkward pause. William was trying to catch up and figure out what to say, and I was trying to spin it all into some joke about how I know a lot of authors, but William's not one of them, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. So, got our second COVID shots.
Good.
We were supposed to get them on Saturday. Friday night, Hy-Vee calls me and they're like, we've got some people canceled tonight. Could you come in tonight and then we can put other people in your spots tomorrow? And I said, sure. And so I went to do that. No benefit to me, just to help out. So I don't like to throw around the word hero, but I mean, we had to pause what we were watching and go do it. But yeah, so I got that done. It knocked me out for most of Saturday. I woke up with a headache and my limbs all kind of felt like lead. And so I basically slept most of the day, but by Saturday night, I was fine. Trish, as per usual, no problems at all. And apparently the Hy-Vees in town collectively did 1,000 shots that day. They are really going. When I looked earlier today, every Hy-Vee in town has open appointments. And some of them have Pfizer and Moderna both. A lot of them just have Pfizer, but some of them have both. Yeah, so it's funny because Oregon, where the rest of my family is, they've had a shortage in Oregon. Due partially, they made everybody eligible pretty early on, but also they have a bigger population than we do. But yeah, so they had kind of a shortage. And so like my mom's got both of hers now. My sister has her second one scheduled, but needed to confirm it was going to happen. She hasn't managed to set it up for her husband or her adult daughter yet. And I'm like, here, they're freaking everywhere. So that's all coming together. My other friends are getting their jabs and we'll be on it soon. And my sister-in-law has been sending out care packages to people who got the vaccine as partially a, here's something to make you feel better if it makes you sick for a day. And also just a, here's a present, good on you for getting the vaccine. And so what they did was they actually ordered online Hy-Vee stuff delivered to our house. And so we got some stuff in there and it was nice. And it was, you know, soup and some fruit and some dried fruits and some nuts and ginger ale, you know, for your tummy and stuff like that. And these wafer cookies that were key lime flavored wafer cookies. And they were very much like the wafer cookies you have growing up, but it was key lime and made with real key limes or whatever. And we really liked those. And one night we're eating some of those and I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure we could just get these locally at our Hy-Vee. And Trish was like, yeah, I mean, in theory, that's where Beth got them. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then we went on. And later that night, I told her, I was like, I understand that you were trying to be polite when I theorized that the cookies that your sister explicitly purchased from our local grocery store might be available at our local grocery store. But in the interest of keeping our wit sharp and our comedy tight, I feel like you really should have let me have it on that one. It's the only way I'm going to learn. Because it was only much later that night I was like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like, I wonder if we could get these at Hy-Vee. Well, that's literally the only place you know you could get them. Because that's where they came from. But right. she was too nice. So that it's useful when you have a big laugh to one of my jokes, because then people know how the lag is again, because it's still there a little bit. It is shorter now though. I keep thinking, I'm like, oh, William doesn't find that funny. Okay. There's like a few beats and then it's like, oh no, he does. Okay. Is your wife still playing Control?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is a good game. I like that game.
I mean, she likes it. She enjoys playing it. I think that it's, I think because I can't watch it, it's too all over the place visually. I think that she has less of an incentive to like.
And he's dead now, people. I think he was going to say she has less of an incentive to play it when, because like he's around, and so it's less of a shared experience. Read all the
material and things. I just think when I'm watching her play any game, she's got more of an incentive to like read stuff she finds and, you know.
Oh, see, because
more like.
I'm the opposite. If Trish is watching, I won't read all the material because I feel like that part's boring for her.
Yeah, for Abby and me, I think it's kind of a, you know, it's an interactive movie kind of thing. And so a lot of the pieces of written material that you read or whatever, it's like explaining things or, you know, it's kind of part of the story. So she'll,
yeah, no, there, me, she'll take me the time too
to sort of go through it and try to understand it. But if I'm not there, yeah, if I'm not there, she'll, you know, if she just wants to go in and shoot things, that's just what she'll do, and she won't worry about knowing what's going on necessarily, because yeah, I'm not there wanting to know what's going on.
See, mine's exactly the opposite, because Trish doesn't give a shit about that stuff. If she's watching, she's not that invested. She just wants to see me, like, you know, run around and do stuff. But if she's not there, I want to know all the details. So frequently, I'll either like do things that I know don't involve a lot of that, or if it gets saved in the system, like I can read it all later. But
right, right.
Something in there. Oh, yeah, it's become interesting now. So Trish has little games on her tablet, and on the Switch she plays Animal Crossing. So that's part of why we haven't watched as much, is traditionally if we're hanging out in the family room together, we're going to watch something on TV for most of that time. But now we are both happy to spend a couple hours with her just playing on her little mobile device and me playing Genshin Impact on the big screen. So it's kind of funny. Mm. We're happy. That's a Trish thing. To me, if you're not doing something together or even talking, it doesn't really matter if you're in the same room. But in Trish's world, if you're in the same room, even if you're completely not communicating or involved in the same activity at all, you're still spending time together. So I've tried to adjust slightly to that vibe. Because sometimes it weirds me out, especially if I'm like going to watch some weird horror movie and she's over there doing her own thing. I'm like, does this bother you? She's like, no. And it doesn't bother her, but like, I keep being weirded out by the idea, or trying to pick like, no, I'm not going to watch that movie. She would really hate that. But she's not paying attention, so she doesn't care. But I'm like, then why is she in here? Why isn't she back? Like, but it's because she wants to spend time with you. I don't fully get it, but you know, I don't have to. I hate the weather this week. It's too fucking cold. I do not like it. I don't like waking up and being cold. It's very confusing. It's sunny. It's nice. It's no, like, there's flowers and shit, but it's 30s. I'm like, no. This was my first week experimenting with, I was going to walk every morning. When I get up and Trish gets ready for work, I was going to take a walk. Too damn cold. So I haven't done it. All right. we're clearly scraping the bottom of the barrel of things to talk about, so I should probably draw a thing.
And draw a thing. Good.
This is from Stu, who, unlike some people who keep putting really elaborate commentary on the blog from shows that are half a year ago without enough context for me to even know in some cases what they're giving an opinion about. There was one that I think you just wrote Tony's idea and then his take on it. I'm like, I don't even know what my idea was. But unlike those people, Stu is not making those comments, but still texts me about it. So I know he's fairly behind, and I kind of know where, because he's at the part where we were talking about the Foundation books, because they had that trailer for the TV show that's going to come out eventually. And we prompted him to go back and read the original trilogy. Which was really funny to me, because he was surprised at how much stuff in it that was clearly swiped by George Lucas. And I was like, what? And then he was just listing off things, and I was like, oh yeah. It's like, well, I mean, nobody ever claimed George Lucas had an original idea. But yeah, didn't know a lot of it came from. And it is weird, back in those days when it's Asimov, it's like, he might have stolen it from somebody else, or he might be the originator of it. You don't know. It's at that edge. All right. So Stu asks, all right, we're going to try this again. What is 2 + 3 this time?
Five.
Oh, that's worse. I mean, it should give you a sign, because I said something as soon as you said it. So that's how long the leg is. All right. So Stu asks, were it possible to do once, what advice would you send back to 21-year-old you? And we'll each have to answer separately, as we are clearly in different time zones. See, I don't know. You got an answer for this? I feel like I should have background music while we're waiting for the question to catch up to. Every time I make a noise, you stop. So even if I'm, so the only way to get you to answer is to say absolutely nothing for the length of the gap, which is dead air for a good chunk of time.
Okay. I was 21 in 1990. I'd have been a year married at that point, because I was married on my I was married on my 20th birthday. So 1990, a year into my marriage, a year away from graduating from college, I think I would entity to give myself some career advice, like like maybe I would encourage me to change my major, or maybe get a different kind of degree, or make different type of contacts, or get to know a different network of people, so that I could figure out a way to go to graduate school in, say, I don't know, journalism or communications or something. Because, I mean, when I look back, there are a lot of things. Okay, so this 1990 was around the time, it was actually a little bit earlier, it seems like it was earlier, maybe this was around the time where my mentor in sociology told me that he wasn't going to be able to take me as a graduate student. And I had everything I had done in undergraduate school up to that point was anticipating that that's exactly what I would do. I would be one of his graduate students and I would get a master's degree and a PhD and think that that wouldn't happen. But then he told me he hadn't taken graduate students since like the 70s or something, when he had a crop of graduate students who he thought were brilliant, but because the other professors were so against him, politically speaking, and I don't mean politically like Democrat or Republican, but politically in terms of the politics of the department,
they were
so against him politically that they denied these people their PhDs. And he was so upset and disgusted by that, that from that point forward, he refused to take graduate students. Well, he didn't tell me that until I was like a sophomore or a junior.
But
so, I had no plan for what else to do with my life. So if I could say anything to myself at 21, I'd probably say, look, I know you're totally, off of your balance on this thing, but maybe that would be smart for the long run, and then you can get into graduate school in these disciplines, and that would be a good way for you to go. And,
I mean, we got very little of that. I can infer there. Yeah, I can infer some things, but you went into bleep bloops pretty hard. I don't know what the deal is lately. Why are we suddenly having this problem? How did you go that far into the process, assuming you were going to be his graduate student, without either of you having discussed it?
I mean, it just didn't occur to me that it could ever go a different way. I never brought it up because I just assumed. I mean, for his research assistant, even me and another guy and I were his research assistants. So it just all seemed like that's the way it was going,
If he clearly liked you so much anyway.
Eventually, yeah. Even though I was an undergraduate, I was taking there came a point where, he did teach graduate classes and I took them. I was taking graduate level classes from him with people who were not his graduate students, but were other departments and other things. So it's like it just all was seemed pretty obvious that's what was going to happen. I never brought it up because I thought in a way it was being brought up, how I was already a research assistant, how I was writing papers that I was going to conferences to deliver these papers, and he was kind of the guy. I mean, in his last book, I don't know if I had told you this, but his last book, it was published after he passed. But he has an acknowledgments thing that he wrote for it, before he died. And I'm in there. He mentions me in the acknowledgments of his book. So, I mean, we had a very we had that reason for me to think that wouldn't happen. I did finally bring it up. I said, all right, well, what do I have to do, you know, to officially, you know, get this? And he told me, oh, well, I don't do that.
Well, yeah,
I didn't know that.
Then the flip side is, how the hell did he not think to mention that earlier? Like, how did he not see that's where you thought things were going?
Well, especially since he was. Well, yeah, I mean, he was officially my advisor, even.
Yeah.
So it seems like. Seems like he should have thought that that's what I was thinking. Or, you know, at some point, like when I was a sophomore or even late sophomore year, he should have said, you know, we need to be thinking about what you're going to do about graduate school. At that point, say, I'm not here, not in this department, I wouldn't recommend, but maybe if you start now, you can get yourself into the communications department, because that's what he advised me to do. It was like a year away from graduating. I didn't know anybody in the communications department. I didn't have a lot of classes. I had taken some communications classes, but I didn't take that many. I didn't see how that was even going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's what I would probably, I would have a conversation with myself about that. But
I noticed
how old were you? 90.
I mean, I was also 21.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
I noticed you wouldn't advise yourself at all about your marriage.
Well, the reason that I didn't, I mean, I don't think there would have been any point. I mean, I think that whole thing went the way it was going to go. I could easily see me going back and being able to persuade myself to make different choices in terms of career and things like that, because I was definitely open to that, especially then. But a year into my marriage, I don't think I was going to be persuaded that, you know, there was anything different I could or the way it was going to go.
That is an interesting piece,
I mean, I hate to say that, you know, you like to think that if someone had told you.
Go on.
I mean, if, you know, it'd be different if the question was, what would you tell your 18-year-old self? You know, because that would be before any of that happened.
Yeah.
Then I would talk about those things, and I think that my 18-year-old self would be receptive. But I've already been married a year, you know, and in my mind, that's it. You don't get divorced. I mean, what can I do about it now? I'm married. You know, that's it. I mean, that's the way I thought about it then. And it's even the way I thought about it when I got divorced, but I didn't feel like I had a lot of choices at that point. But only a year into my marriage, it would have been pointless for me to go back and waste any of my time talking to me about that. So I would talk about career.
I think that is an interesting consideration in this whole thing, is if you went back and talked to your 21-year-old self, would your 21-year-old self believe you?
Sure.
There's a lot of that component for me too. I don't know. I'm of two minds about this. One, and this has come up before in places, is I don't really want to advise myself of anything, because the path I took is what ended up with Trish. And it's very hard to alter the timeline at all and still have me end up with Trish, because so much of how we managed to work had to do with when we met, how we met, and where we both were in our lives at the time. I have thought about this before, and had we started dating a year earlier or a year later, it might not have worked. We were really at a point where we both needed to take steps in our lives that happened to coincide. So part of me is like, no, don't do it. I like my life. I don't want to mess with it. But that's a boring answer to the question. If we throw that aside, I would have to create an elaborate document before I went and talked to my 21-year-old stuff, because there are so many things. At 21, I'm in the second half of my sophomore year of college. I'm about to, I'm in the second half of my junior year in college. I'm about to leave in the fall for London. I am in a very, I'm in a pretty long-term relationship with somebody. And yeah, I'm finishing up my anthropology major. It's probably a little late to get me on a different major track. I probably would switch things around so that I still could have managed my gender and women's studies minor. There was some confusion about the classes I was taking in London and whether they qualified toward my major that caused me to have to change plans, and I had to not finish that that minor, basically. And I think that would be useful. I made a lot of mistakes with people in those later years. I would advise myself on a lot of things involving who I hooked up with and who I had relationships with. Handling, I still shouldn't have married the woman I was in a long-term relationship with, but there would have been much better ways to end that. It blew up in a way that I was not happy about. I definitely would have advised myself to be more involved and active in London. I had a great time in London, but I could have done so much more. I spent a lot of time just hanging out in my flat, smoking hash and watching TV, which was fun. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, could have done more. I probably would have tried to light a fire under myself to be more physically active back then. Yeah, things like that. Hitch your star to Kumail Nanjiani. I mean, he was right there. I could have buddied up to him. Could have moved with him to, I think Chicago is where he went first. Followed him, tried my own stand-up career. That could have been interesting. And then, of course, just basics, you know, here's some stocks you might want to invest in. Things like that. I could tell myself which landlords were bad, which ones weren't. Things like that. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. 21 is a tricky one, though, because yeah, a lot of stuff is decided. If you had sent me back a year before, a whole bunch of shit I did in college that I wish I could have solved. If you'd sent me back a year before that, even more things, like so much, and missed opportunities and all sorts of stuff. I might have gone for a whole different major.
Oh yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I am very happy with my anthropology degree. It has served me well on a personal level, on a an economic level, and professional level, not at all. So I also could have, I mean, I made some terrible mistakes in college I could have fixed. There's a lot of stuff there, but the problem is, yeah, I like my life, so I probably wouldn't mess with it. Sorry, Stu, that's probably not as fun an answer, but at least we didn't steal it from Asimov.
If I, you know, if I could choose where to go back, well, first of all, it's kind of like you said. You know, you don't know if you go back what parts of your life you like that you're going to mess up. So don't go back. But that's, like you say, that's a boring answer. So if I could choose to go back, and if I thought I could fix only the bad things and leave all the good things where they are, I would have to go clear back probably to like 1984, summer of 84, probably, and have a long talk with that guy and say, you know, because I remember back then what my plans were. And I remember how it only a few months later, I was already screwing them up. So, you know, I would probably go back and tell that kid, you've got these plans. They're good plans. You don't know this yet, but just in a few months, you're going to screw them up. And this is why. I figured out why you did that. And I really hope you don't do it this time. Because, you know, but like you said, if I didn't do those things, then I wouldn't have done other things and other things and other things. And then maybe a lot of bad things that I deeply regret wouldn't have happened that apart.
So. Yeah. I would like the opportunity to catch myself somewhere in my mid-teens and just educate myself on some fucked up views I have. Because as I've talked before, it was before the internet, so a lot of this didn't happen. But I had a lot of fucked up sort of misogynist views, even while embracing feminist ideals later in college. I was the lonely guy who thought if he was nice enough, he deserved a sex reward, you know, that kind of thing. And I want to go back and explain that to myself to avoid terrible things I did. But I also feel like I would have so much better friendships and relationships with people if I just knew this stuff beforehand, and like better ways to treat people and things like that. People, because I had a lot of friends in college. I also had a reputation. It always throws people now, especially, oh, that's the thing too. I would advise myself to get on meds faster because that made a huge difference. But I was kind of the bad boy in college, which was super weird because I was exactly not that before college. I was the nice nerdy one. But yeah, in college I became kind of the dangerous one in some ways, which attracted some people in that way, but never was a good idea. And was never something that I like planned. It just happened that way. So I think it would be interesting to early on be like, you've got some issues that we should discuss. But of course, the further back I go, I think the less likely I'd listen. The younger I go back, the more I think I already know everything.
Oh, not me. I remember thinking, even when I was like 13, 14, 15, I remember thinking, man, it'd be great if my future self figured out how to time travel and could come give me advice so I wouldn't make stupid mistakes. I totally thought that. And I was always talking to my parents or adults or anyone I could who could maybe warn me about the things that I could avoid, because I knew I didn't know anything.
Oh, no.
That's one thing that I've always.
At 15, I knew everything. And every mistake that happened was the outside world. They were all wrong. I knew.
I've always been the type of person that, I mean, even when I do know something, I don't think I know anything.
I was going to say, you're still like this.
I've always thought.
You're still hoping, you're hoping 70-year-old William will come back now and tell you what to do.
I am. If anyone's ever read my photo webcomic Stuck, I think the character that I most like is Ninja.
Of course.
Because, yeah.
What do you mean the character totally, that you're most totally like? Me. Ninja's you. Yeah. Ninja's just you. That is obvious from comic one. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Did that pretty take much. You time to figure out? Those of us who read it knew immediately.
Nope. I knew that was my POV character the whole time.
Good. So did we.
Not that I knew how the whole thing was going to go from, I didn't necessarily know how whole comic was going to go when I started, but I knew archetype and write as an archetype. But Ninja was like, yeah, this is totally how I feel and have 100% life. So.
If you guys haven't gone checked it out, go to Atheist Theater and read the comic Stuck. It is a really good comic. And it's complete. So you can do the whole thing. All right. That's enough. I want to go make lunch because we're doing this surprisingly early and it's past lunchtime now. So sorry again for technical issues. Hopefully they'll be better next week. We'll be back at our normal scheduled time our new normal scheduled time for us, which is different. But stuff happened last week and stuff happened this week, neither of which will be things happening next week. So I'm hoping that fixes some stuff. We will see. In the meantime, write in, please, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Go to the blog and tell us the parts you couldn't understand of William, and he will explain what he actually was saying. Give advice to your 21-year-old self on there. Stock tips, lottery numbers, things like that. That would be handy. I don't know. I mean, listen next week. You know, it'll be good for you. And pause.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.